Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of July 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's from Stuart Peterson. We'll check the agricultural news for the afternoon and discuss the weather forecast, too. That with World Weather Incorporated's Drew Lerner in Kansas City. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. July corn today at 434 and a quarter, up 2.5 cents. December there at 439.5, 2.25 higher. March at 446 and a quarter, up 1.75. And the May at 449.5, up 1.5. July soybeans today at 893, 10.25 higher. August at 894.5, up 8.5 cents. November beans at 912.75. It finished 8.5 cents higher. January futures at 924.5, up 8.25. And next year's July at 950.75, finished 7.25 higher. Soybean oil at 27.97, up 9 cents. The bean meal at 309.10, that finished $1.20 higher for the day. Soft red winter wheat, July contract at $5.11.75, up to a bushel. And July up 3/4 at 441.25. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby August contract at 107.62.5, down 50 cents. Feeders in the August 52.5, lower at $142.35. And the lean hogs were 100 pounds at $71.75, up 37.5 cents. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson to take a look at what happened in Chicago. Hey, thanks so much, Jackie, for being with us this afternoon.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with a tweet that I saw this morning that came out of the Arthur Companies. This is a grain company that is about 70 miles to the north and west of Fargo in North Dakota, that they released a 115 car worth of corn headed to the Eastern Corn Belt today to fill demand on the BNSF Railway. And I thought that was pretty unique and just shows that, there is corn in the country and it's not just in storage in Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio in the Corn Belt.
Oh, right. And what I thought was interesting is when they said they released North Dakota gold, and what does that mean? Well, that I think for all of our listeners, they've got to really step back. Right now, we've seen basis improvement. Why? Because farmers aren't selling; they're sitting on it. Well, this grain, if it's coming into Illinois, and I've seen this happen in the past when they've had horrible basis up there. When basis improves dramatically other places, sometimes they can sell that grain and make money without having, and having to truck it a long ways. And so the strategy of thinking that by you're not selling is going to continue to force things into a better direction isn't necessarily true. It can be gotten from a lot of places. And, after the whole China thing kind of blew up here, Pacific Northwest isn't taking everything it used to be taking. We have to really keep an eye on what's going on because there's grain and it's going to move as long as the basis or the price is attractive. It isn't just us in Illinois who are supplying these people. They can get it from all over the place, including South America if they want to.
Yeah, so the basis pops that producers are watching and expecting to be larger, or maybe even the futures, might not move as much as they think, simply because there's a whole lot of corn still to be moved. And I guess we'll find out more yet tomorrow on the WASD report.
Oh, that's true. That's very true. I think everybody, for when you look at the WASD report, and I've got the estimates for everybody. The biggest thing they'll be watching is what's going to happen on acreage. Well, you and I both know the acreage from June is going to come in, but that means that maybe harvested acres will change. When you look at the estimates, they're estimating 82.5 million harvested acres versus 82.4 in June. Very little change there. Production, they're estimating it's going to go down about 100 million bushels. Yield, they're saying 164.8 versus 166. And, I know people are screaming blood and guts about that, but the thing is, if you move too fast, it also has an impact that is hard to recover from sometimes. And I thought it's interesting, in the past 25 years, the USDA has changed the corn yield in July 8 times. Three were increases in 94, 99, and 2003, where they gained 3 to 4 bushels from the June forecast. Five of them were reductions. The smallest was a half a bushel in 2008. The heaviest was 20 bushels in 2012. USDA cut corn yields by 3 bushels in 96 and 2005, and it took off 5 bushels in 1993. You know, so we've already seen a 10-bushel drop. You know, now will we see, a 5-bushel drop on this one too? I myself don't think it's probably very realistic at this stage of the game, but you just never know. I mean, it could very well be that that's the circumstance we're in. Same thing with beans. I mean, they're looking at lower harvested acres, 79.6 versus 83.8. It makes sense, you know, because we lost 4 million acres on the acres report. Production, 3.8 versus 4.1 billion. And yield, they're saying 48.5 versus 49.5. So there's a bushel of yield going away. And like we talked last week, yield is still the key. There's no question about that. You look at the ending stocks, corn ending stocks, the average guess is only 12 million less than in June at 1.663. Beans actually down 215 million from June at 830 million versus 1.045 billion. That's a pretty significant change there. And wheat basically 1.038 billion versus 1.072 billion from the June report. Now, if you look at the 18 stocks, they're actually raising. The estimates are raising the 18-19 crop stocks to 2.2 billion from 2.195, and beans almost the same, 1.056 billion versus 1.070 billion. And so the first numbers they gave you, Todd, were from 1920, which is where our focus really is right now. World-ending stocks, almost identical on corn for June. Soybeans down 2 million metric tons. Wheat down 2 million metric tons. So really not a real biggie. And some of that is because, you know, some of these other countries are picking up the slack. When we look at Argentina and Brazil, there too. Corn, identical to what it was in June, at 49 million metric tons, 101 million metric tons for Brazil, same as June. And Argentina, beans and Brazil, no change. I mean, you know, it's just a scenario where this is going to be tough. It's a strange month is what it is, and it's a strange market.
Hey, you know, last week we went through those day of and 2 weeks after numbers. Do you still have them in front of you? Can you repeat those for me?
Yeah, I do have them. Let's see what's here. On the day of, when we look at corn, okay, this is the most likely report, you know, out of all the reports to have a positive day, and the change is 6 cents. And down 7 if it does go down. Now, when you look at 2 weeks from now, it is the number one report to be negative. Now, that might be different this year because, you know, normally 2 weeks from now, we know a lot about corn because of pollination. But there we've seen a positive change of up 38 or down 27. And when you look at beans, again, the number one report for a positive on the day of the report, and that's up 9 or down 16 if it goes down. And then when you get 2 weeks from now, it's the number one report for negative. And if it was up, it was up 38 cents. If it was down 73 on average. And so, you know, those are some pretty scary numbers in a lot of ways because that's a huge change. Now, this year, you know, everything, the pendulum will swing and we'll see once what happens. If the weather starts to straighten itself out, I think that, you know, some of the outside investors and stuff might be a little less willing to feed the bull as much as the bull would like.
Where does the managed money stand today?
Well, I'll tell you what, those guys are kind of interesting. You look at managed money, they're 34,000 contracts long on spring wheat, or soft red, excuse me, I said spring. Long 196,000 on corn, not a whole lot of change there. Short 33,000 on beans, that's an improvement from last week. Short 14,000 on soy meal and short 30,000 on soy oil. And, you know, soy oil can't get out of the short no matter what. I mean, it just hasn't been a good year for soy oil. But the managed money right now, what that says to me is managed money is treading water. You know, they don't have the confidence necessarily to plow in and maybe buy what they'd like to buy And so therefore, you know, they're not making a whole lot of changes. We'll see once after this report what happens.
Yeah. Can you go through the support and resistance figures too?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got them. Let me see ones here. Well, if we look at corn, September support is at 424, 410, and then 380. Resistance is 442, 469, and 513. And then you look at Dees, support 431, 410, 397. And resistance is at 441, 473, and then 514. And this is based on weekly is what it is. Beans, September, we've got support at 885, 870, and 835. Resistance, 904, 935, 984. And on November beans, we have supported 892, 863, and then 815. None of those numbers are really, it doesn't make me a lot happy. But at the same time, when we look at resistance, 939, 971, and then long-term is 1006. And so I think that it's interesting because we've seen so many people who've been so extremely bullish corn for a lot of good reasons. And now, you know, you can only, the market only takes so much information. I mean, you can't every day come out and say the same thing over and over and over again and expect the market to react all the time to it. And so I think what we're seeing is a bit of a shift on the pendulum, and now you're starting to see them take a little bit closer look at the bean side of things. Beans still have a big carryout, but I do think that beans have some potential coming down the road.
Before I let you go, did you scope out a fun fact for us this week?
Yes. You guys will probably just, I don't know what you'll think of it, but I thought it was so cool. Basically, I'm wondering out loud if this is the future of ag in some of the urban areas that lay along the oceans or harbors or places like this. In the Netherlands, they now have a floating dairy in their harbor. I know. Urban pressure basically was pushing ag out of the area. And so they developed this floating dairy. It serves a lot of purposes. It gives access to locally produced dairy products, which are processed on the upper level. And when I say products, it's because they process not only milk, but they process yogurt out there. On the next level, on the lowest level, they produce the fruit that they put into the yogurt. And then on the top level, we've got the girls who are just really enjoying, I'm sure, the fresh air and the sunshine. And of course, you know, it's a very humane looking type situation. In other words, you know, they're not going to get sunburned and they're not going to get anything else. But I think, you know, do we need to go to the moon? I just wonder if we can't make better use of some of the areas that we currently have. I mean, I would put it in kind of on a parallel to what Japan did when they built their harbor, or they built their airport, you know, out in the harbor, off the shore. I think that, you know, a person has to just be willing to open up your mind and say that there are more possibilities than what we're used to.
I'm glad you do. Hey, thanks so much.
Yep, thank you. Have a good one.
You too. That is Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson. In today's agricultural news, let's start with the relocation of ERS and NIFA to Kansas City. The General Services Administration, or GSA, has extended the deadline by 1 month for Kansas City real estate companies to submit bids to host the Economic Research Service and the National Institute for Food and Agriculture. The new deadline, now August 7th, comes after the current NIFA landlord has formally protested the entire search process, calling it a quasi-competition, that according to Politico. NBL Associates, a real estate company that has been NIFA's landlord for 19 years, argues USDA lacks the authority to conduct a real estate search on a large scale required to move ERS and NIFA. The company also wants to be able to participate in the bidding process and has requested that the search start over, but with the GSA in charge. The Agriculture Department handed over responsibility of procuring office space to GSA after Secretary Sonny Perdue announced the Kansas City pick in June. Perdue has said that he believes the two research agencies should be moved in order to be closer to farming communities, save cost, and improve staff retention and recruitment. USDA intends to house employees in a temporary building. The early wave of employees that choose to relocate could arrive in the middle of this month. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but we'll switch gears to trade. Washington and Beijing are looking to get trade talks back on track after Presidents Donald Trump and Xi Jinping reached a short-term truce last month at the G20 meeting in Osaka, Japan. But after a phone call Tuesday between top trade officials, there's no word on when the two sides will next meet in person. Now, Larry Kudlow, the president's chief economic advisor, said Tuesday the United States and China might not ever reach an agreement because the remaining issues are so complex. Kudlow also reiterated that the president's expectations that China would quickly start buying up large amounts of U.S. ag products, including soybeans, wheat, and energy, remains possible. Energies, of course, could be referring to biofuels. Speaking of which, an oil industry group has launched an anti-ethanol advertising campaign calling ethanol mandates job killers. The American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers launched the campaign asking President Trump to keep his promise to protect U.S. refiners from unchecked ethanol mandates that threaten to kill, quote, our jobs. The organization calls current renewable fuel standard ethanol mandates unrealistic and says the RFS does not match the realities of the fuel market. The campaign is running in Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Meanwhile, the National Biodiesel Board launched a campaign Monday showing the harm small refiner waivers have on biofuel demand and rural economies. Those ads were placed in Washington, D.C. and Des Moines, Iowa. However, AFPM asserts the harm is unfunded, citing data showing ethanol blending rates are steady and exports are at an all-time high. Of course, the ethanol industry is one of the largest users of corn, and that demand will be on display again tomorrow in the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report. The chairman of the World Agricultural Outlook Board, Seth Myers, has been thinking a lot about the acreage numbers that came out from USDA NAS at the end of June, and he's been considering whether those should be used in tomorrow's report.
If we think there's a justification for changes, we'll make them.
Meyer concedes there's really not a lot of time between the end of the month of June and tomorrow's report.
What do you know between June 28th and July 11th that would make you think that you should second guess a huge survey about acreage?
The monthly WASDE numbers will be released at 11 a.m. tomorrow. You can find them online at willag.org. And finally today, organizers this week announced FarmAid's annual music and food festival will return to the heart of dairy country on Saturday, September the 21st in Wisconsin. Coordinators of the event say this year, the organization stages FarmAid 2019 in an economic climate similar to the one that sparked the first FarmAid concert in 1980. President and founder Willie Nelson says America's family farmers are facing immense challenges to hold on to their farms, adding, it's just not right. FarmAid 2019 will include performances by FarmAid board members Willie Nelson, John Mellencamp, Neil Young, and Dave Matthews with Tim Reynolds and others. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. You know that I traveled to Fargo, North Dakota on Sunday of this weekend, at least on that day and several days ahead of that. This particular part of the world was filled with smoke from some of the wildfires that have been burning in Canada. They have had some serious drought. Drew Lerner is now here. I bet he has some more information on this. It was really kind of odd, just because it was a low-hanging sort of smoke, and it really just was smoke. That's just an amazing amount of smoke coming out of Canada this way. What can you tell me about those areas?
Well, I can certainly tell you that the drought in the far western part of Canada continues to be pretty serious. Now, I'm talking about almost outside of crop country, up in the forest in the northwest part of the country. This is the second year in a row of just critically dry tinder there, and obviously it's caught fire once again. Last year, we also saw a lot of dense smoke across the prairies. In fact, there was a lot of folks who thought that inhibited some of the degree day accumulations, and some of the crop growth rates were somewhat influenced by the lack of direct sunlight. So that may be happening again this year. We're in a better mode for the prairies this year with a little better rainfall occurring in crop crop country, but those forested areas of the northwest part of the country are certainly still dealing with some dryness. But there's actually areas in western Alberta in the agricultural region that are too wet right now, and there's some dryness that's almost as significant in the southern part of Alberta and southwesternmost parts of Saskatchewan, and that isn't going to budge for the next 10 days. So a lot of contrast across the prairies, and the bottom line is the crops are doing better now than they were a few weeks ago, but there's still a need for better evening out of this rainfall bias for all of these areas.
Yeah, so growing degree days and sunlight, a little heat and sunlight actually evens things out really quickly. Tell me about the Corn Belt and what the prospects for that to happen might be.
Well, you know, we're going to see warm nighttime temperatures. That's the biggest thing. You know, when we look at the forecast temperature chart, we see that it's above normal, but a lot of that warmth is at night. The high relative humidity just keeping the temperatures up at night, and that's primarily where the source of that warmth is. The afternoon temperatures are really not that far off from where they ought to be at this time of the year. But we do have a ridge of high pressure that is over the plains and Rocky Mountain region, and as we go forward through the next 5 to 7 days, that ridge will work its way eastward and come into the heart of the Midwest. So we will see a boost in our temperatures. Even in the afternoon, we'll start seeing some upper 80 and lower 90-degree temperatures, kind of like last weekend, actually, and we'll see that occur over a multiple-day period. And in the meantime, that tropical depression that's now forming in the Gulf of Mexico is still poised to come up through the delta. We might see a little bit of rain come up about the same time that ridge comes over the Midwest next week. And what will end up happening is we'll get a little bit of moisture to occur in the Ohio River Valley area, but the high-pressure ridge will likely reduce the moisture fairly quickly. So it will end up being a little bit more of a tease than it will be a general rain.
Any other areas across the planet that we should check in on, especially in the Northern Hemisphere?
Well, we're certainly watching France right now. You know, they had that heat wave about 10 days or 2 weeks ago, and they haven't had any rain since. The temperature's cooled off real nicely, got more seasonal, but it still hasn't rained a drop. And we're looking at a pattern here that's going to continue to perpetuate that for 10 more days. So some of the summer crops and even some of the late spring crops in France are definitely taking it on the chin right now. Germany was involved with this, too, for a little while, but rain is expected later tonight through Saturday in Germany and some neighboring areas of Poland as well as Czech Republic, so we'll see relief in those areas. And then we have the opposite problem in the western part of Russia. It won't stop raining. Those folks have seen rain on just about every day now for the past week, and they've got 10 more days of rain coming and going across that region. It is time to start harvesting the wheat and rye there, as well as some rapeseed that still needs to be harvested. So all those crops are going to suffer a decline in quality if we can't get better drying to take place.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He joined us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.